Welcome to True North Prosperity, the podcast dedicated to empowering Canadians on their journey to financial freedom. Hey everybody, welcome to the very first True North Prosperity podcast. I wanted to take a second to thank all of you very much for taking the time out of your day and coming here to listen to my podcast. Now, this first little bit, I want to take a little bit to introduce myself and the podcast to you guys. So my name is Miko and I am a young investor who's just working a regular old job, 8:30 to 9 p.m. I'm in a sales position. So if I could get into investing and if I could start my journey towards getting that financial freedom, so can you. And that's the whole idea of this podcast. I want to show you guys kind of how I started, talk about my experiences, some of the mistakes I made, and some of the things I've learned along the way. And hopefully I can use all of my information to empower you guys to make some better investment decisions in your life, just so you could get towards that financial freedom that much faster. I did want to mention that I am not a financial advisor or a licensed financial advisor. So if you are making some huge financial decision, I would recommend going to see one. However, I hope that I could provide some good insights and some good knowledge to all of you, regardless of the financial journey that you are currently on. Now, the reason I wanted to start this podcast is to really tailor towards the Canadian market, at least for the beginning of this podcast here. I don't have a long-term plan of where this podcast will go, but one thing I know is I love talking about finances and investing, so I might start going out into global markets and learning more about those. But for now, I really wanted to tailor towards Canadians because there are some really amazing podcasts out there that I've listened to many times, but there hasn't really been any great Canadian one that's tailored towards specific investing. There's tons and tons of them for any investing that has to do with the US. And even though they might be similar, they do have different account names. The accounts might work differently. Taxes might be a little bit different. And I really wanted to tailor it just for Canadians. So instead of you having to listen to it and then trying to search up, find equivalents of what this is like I had to, I kind of wanted to put it out here for all of you guys to enjoy and really take in as is. Like I mentioned, I have a huge passion for finance and investing and learning more about personal finance. So this will be as much of a learning experience for me as I hope it will be for you guys as well. So let's get right into it. These first few episodes, these first 1, 2, 3 episodes here will probably be a little bit more basic for those of you who are a little bit more advanced, but I might throw out some trinkets here and there. But I did want to start this journey out from the very, very beginning, just for those people who have never really thought about or considered investing. And, you know, I just wanted to introduce it very slowly so that everybody can listen to this podcast from episode 1, 2, and 3. And then be able to keep up with everything I might be going in more details in with later episodes. So let's start at the very beginning. Let's say you have no investment accounts. Before even going into where you should open an account or where might you want to think about opening an account and where should you invest into and all that kind of stuff, there's going to be plenty of time to get into that. Trust me, we should talk about paying off high interest debt. All of these podcasts I mentioned earlier, all these different influencers and financial people might tell you something different. Some might say, make sure you have no debt before investing, or, you know, make sure you have no debt at all. Some might say to try and leverage your debt to get more investing going. And some of them will say, just pay off your high interest debt and your lower interest debt you can keep. And if you can out invest it, that's fine. I don't want to get into that, because it can be a little bit confusing and, you know, there's not really one right answer. It all comes into what kind of risk you're able to take in. But the one thing all of these different types of investors do agree on is paying off your high interest debt. So this is debt that you can't out-invest. And what I mean by that is if you can get 8 to 10% a year on the markets, your credit card, you're probably paying around 20%, 22% on your credit card. So you're technically losing money because you're not able to out-invest your credit card debt. So try to get rid of especially your credit card debt. If you have any personal loans, I know those are kind of crazy right now here in Canada. I wanted to go into a little bit about how much you should be investing and what you can afford to invest. So once you have all your high interest debt kind of paid off, you might be thinking to yourself, okay, great, but how much should I be setting aside, for example, to invest? I know experts are currently recommending anywhere between 10 to 20% of your pre-tax income. However, for me personally, I would say whatever you can afford. The more the better. So if you could do more than 20%, why not? And just make sure you can diversify your portfolio, which will we be talking about in future episodes. But if you can't even make 10%, I know things are really tight right now with how crazy expensive everything is. So if you can't even invest 10%, I know some people might be thinking like, oh, what's the point if I can only do 5% or even less than that? The truth is, whatever you can afford to invest, compound interest will be your best friend, especially later on. And you can always work towards increasing the amount of money you make to increase the amount you're able to put aside into investments. It's always better to start with a little amount and increase it later than waiting until later to start investing, because the longer you wait, the less time you have for compound interest to do its thing. Now, I know it might not be a crazy amount if you're only able to invest $50 a month, let's say. At least you'll get in the habit of having that automated so that when you are starting to contribute more, you're kind of getting a flow for it. You know how it works. You know that the market goes up and down. You know it's not a straight shot up. And that kind of leads me into the next point here. Investing really depends on your financial situation, such as, you know, how much you're making, your age. These are the two main things I would say will determine what kind of strategy you should be incorporating, especially age. If you're a young investor like me, you're going to have compound interest on your side. You know, if you got like me 40 plus years until retirement, you're in a really good spot to start investing because, you know, 40, even 30 years will compound extremely nicely. So you can make, you know, slightly lower contributions because you're probably making less than someone who's been in the workforce for, say, 20, 30 years already. You're probably not in as high of a position as somebody who would be in the market that long. So, you know, you can be making smaller contributions and have it compound a lot more. Now, if you're on the flip side of that, let's say, you know, you've got 20, 15, 10 years into retirement, you don't have compound interest on your side, but even 20, 15, 10 years can compound really amazingly, especially that you most likely have a little bit more income that you can put into those accounts. And no matter what age you are at, it's never too late to invest. I hope you guys know that. But of course, if the older you are, the safer type of investments you should be thinking about. Because the markets do dip down, there might be a bad year one year where your investments go down 10, 15%. But then you'll be able to gain that back really quickly, especially when you're young throughout the years. You'll probably go through so many ups and downs that you're by the time you're retired, you're not even going to be thinking twice about it. So leading me back into what kind of started this point is how much should you be investing? Well, try to aim for that 10 to 20. If you can't get into that range, if you're slightly under it, it's okay. Just do what you can afford comfortably. And if you could do more than that and still be comfortable with your living situation, all the power to you. I would recommend it. For me, I'm doing a lot more than that 20%. Just because the more you're able to invest at an earlier age, the more that's going to compound. So the way to do that is take your monthly after-tax income that you are getting and then subtract every single bill, every single monthly bill. So that will be your car insurance, if you have any car payments, your credit cards, right? You should work towards getting those paid off first, because all the payments that you will be doing towards your credit card, once you get those paid off, you can now put into your investments as well. So now that's, you know, an extra 30, 40, 50 bucks, depending on how much credit card that you have, that you can be putting towards investments. And obviously, if you got any rent or a mortgage going as well, and if you have, you know, any kids, make sure to bring that into account. I know kits can get pretty expensive as well, and obviously food, electrical, just think about all the expenses that you have and subtract that from your monthly income. You should be left with what's left over, and you can give yourself a little bit of a balance because, you know, I'm sure you might have some streaming services like Netflix or Disney Plus in there that you might be subscribed to. So I would lower whatever you have left by maybe $100 or $200 just to give you a little bit of wiggle room. And now that you have that amount, that's technically how much you would be able to invest. Now, I don't want you guys investing everything that you have left over because, you know, there might be some sort of issue happening that you will need some sort of emergency fund. Now, this is what you kind of need before you start investing, especially if you have a lot of expenses. So an emergency fund is basically a fund that you keep in some sort of account that is not volatile, and it gives you maybe a set amount that you can access at any point. So this can be something like a high interest savings account. You know, I know you could get those on Wealthsimple right now from anywhere from 4 to 5.5%, depending on how much money you have. If you have your auto deposit turned on, for example, you jump from 4 to 4.5. If you have 100K or more, you get 5%. And I believe if you have 500,000 or more in Wealthsimple, you will get 5.5% on your balance. So that is where I think you should go with your emergency fund, at some sort of high interest savings account where you can easily access it. And what this is used for is trying to get 3 to 6 months of your expenses for the case of an emergency. Let's say, you know, you happen to lose your job, or, you know, just some tragedy happens, which, you know, life does hit you unexpectedly, and I hope that does not happen to anybody. But sometimes hoping is not enough. And, you know, I want to be real with you guys here. If you got those 3 to 6 months of expenses saved up in an interest account that's still gaining you a little bit of interest every month, then at least you'll have a little bit more peace of mind, and you don't have to worry as much if anything ever happens. It could even be something as simple as you run a nail on your tire and now you need to get a new tire. Tires can be quite expensive. But once you have that first initial emergency fund with 3 to 6 months investing, and you can even invest whatever amount you had left over in the previous calculations. So let's say you had an extra $200 or $300 a month after all of your expenses. You can now invest a whole $300 a month once you have, let's say, $16,000, $17,000, $18,000, $20,000, $30,000 in your emergency fund. Because, you know, if anything happens, you do have that emergency fund. But I beg you guys not to dip into those funds for needless expenses. Those should strictly be for an emergency fund. I want you guys to always be prepared for every situation that you can be, especially in today's economy. Now, once you basically have all of that planned out, all of that set up, you can now start to invest. And the first step of that is finding out where you want to invest on, what institution do you want to use. So a lot of banks will allow you to open investment accounts, and you can feel free to dig around and find the one that you like to use the most. But for me, I personally use Wealthsimple, and I'd recommend it. It is super easy to use, and they just recently are offering a lot of after-hour trading who, like me, work later jobs and might want to look at the markets and invest a little bit more. But obviously, it's not mandatory, because the idea would be that you turn on your auto investment, so it would automatically take however much money of each of your paychecks and invest that automatically. Now, what I really like about Wealthsimple as well is, because I have my auto deposit turned on, I get a 4.5% interest rate on my total cash value of my account, which means all of the money I have on that account will be gaining 4.5% interest every month for just sitting there. So my emergency fund would be gaining that 4.5% interest month after month after month. Obviously, the 4.5% interest is for the entire year. So let's say you start with a balance of $30,000 at 4%. That'd be $1,200 that you are gaining every year, so $100 a month. And of course, that would compound on itself as well. Now, you could either choose to invest that into different investment accounts that might gain you more, or just keep it snowballing in that account. I'd say that's up to you. I would personally reinvest that into something that would give you more. If your expenses stay the same, there is no need to have more. But if your expenses go up naturally, you'd want to increase your emergency fund. But like I said, the place you choose to invest is up to you. I would just recommend starting with something a little bit easier. I'm not going to be talking about a lot of day trading here, at least for now, because that is a little bit more advanced. It has a lot more advanced techniques and does require you to basically have access to the market throughout the entire day. So I do not want to get into that as much. For me here, what I want to tell you guys is really the power of turning on that auto deposit into your investment account, having it automatically invest into something and not even thinking about it. You could definitely check on it every once in a while. You know, it is nice seeing how your money grew over the course of a few months or a year or a few years. And even, you know, seeing all the types of dividends you might have earned and all this different stuff. It's really cool to see. And it's a big motivator to try and put more into it, especially when you see it growing like that. But going more into it now that you kind of have an institution where you've opened an investment account, you kind of need to decide, what kind of account will you open? And what I mean by that is there is plenty of different types of investment accounts. There is your TFSA, your RRSP, your non-registered account, your FHSA. You know, there's so many different accounts for you out there that at first it might be a little bit overwhelming, especially if you don't know what this is, you don't know what any of this are, what any of these are. So that's kind of what I want to be explaining, at least in this episode, definitely the second episode, and maybe even the third, just depending on how much time I need. And please, if anyone's listening and, you know, up to this point, if you have any questions, you know, I'm working on a website, but feel free to comment or go onto my Instagram, which is just True North Prosperity. Comment down on one of my posts or feel free to send me a DM with a question that you may have at any point in any of my podcasts. Because I want to make sure that I can give you guys the best information that you need. So if you ever have any questions about something that I might have skipped over by accident or not explained as much as you would like, I would definitely dedicate a portion of my episodes to a little bit of a Q&A session. Maybe at the end of each episode, if I get enough questions, I will take the last 10-15 minutes of that episode just to answer some questions. So I just wanted to throw that out there for you guys, because I know I've listened to different podcasts and I really like those question and answer sessions. So if you guys have any, just please feel free to send them to me and I will get them answered for you guys. Now, you also have to pay taxes, and you know, you have to think about taxes when it comes to all these different accounts. And that's where some of them can be very, very good. And some of them could have their disadvantages as well. You know, each account has its advantage and each account has its disadvantage. There's no one perfect account for you out there. And you know, any interest earned on your deposits is considered as general in tax and it's taxed for the year. Now, there are different types of rates. So I believe anything up to $50,000 is taxed at 15%. On the next 50,000, I believe it's at 20.5%. And there's a big chart that I could go over more in detail if you guys were interested in that, but I don't want to, you know, confuse with too many numbers. And there's also something called capital gains tax, which is specifically for any investments. Now, how this capital gains tax works is that when you sell an asset, let's say you have an asset where you bought it for $1,000 and you sold it for $2,000, you would only get taxed 50% of your gains. So you've gained $1,000, 50% of that would be $500. So you'd technically only put $500 on your income tax report for the end of the year that you gained from capital gains, which is a great thing because you do keep 50% of your profits completely tax-free on that. However, it is something to think about because it will increase your income for the year. Now, I did want to mention that capital gains are only taxed once they are realized. So there's two different types of things that I wanted to talk about here: realized gains and unrealized gains. So let's say you have an investment that you bought in January and you paid $1,000. In December, it goes up to $2,000. You sell it. That means you take the money out of that investment. You have $2,000 now, $1,000 of what you originally put in, and $1,000 profit. You'd pay 50%, so $500 you would have to put on your income tax report. Now, unrealized gains, let's say you bought the stock, $1,000 in January, and you held it until next year. And let's say in December, it did go up to $2,000 and it stayed like that and it went through the year, but you never sold the stock. That is considered an unrealized gain because you still have the stock growing and losing. So even though you have $1,000 gain, you don't report that because you never sold it. So, you know, there is no need to report it because you don't actually have that money yet. You only get the stock once you sell it, once it becomes realized. Now, one thing that a lot of people don't actually know about is you can offset your capital gains with your capital losses. So if you have a stock where you made $1,000, but you bought another stock where maybe you lost $500, you can say that you've gained that $500, right, that you would put on your report, or $1,000 or $1,500 or however much you would have gained from your stock. And then let's say you lost a certain amount, you can also put your losses on your report to take into account. And you could do this until basically your capital gains would equal zero. Now, obviously, the whole idea is for your capital gains not to equal zero, because if they do equal zero, that means you didn't actually make any money from any of your investments, right? So that is not what we want to shoot for. However, that is just something to think about, that if you do have a losing stock, you can put that on your report so that you are at least not taxed as heavily for that year. Now, I know all of this might sound a little bit confusing, like what is realized, what is unrealized, what is capital gains. Just, I hope you were able to get a little bit of snippet of information. It does take a little bit of time to let all this information absorb. So just take your time, you know, skip back, re-listen to a section of the podcast if you need. If you still need further clarification, feel free to send me a message. If I do get a lot of questions about certain things, I would also be making, you know, I want to be making dedicated YouTube videos to this sorts of stuff. So, you know, please feel free to go and go on my website. I don't have my channel made yet, but it is in the works. Hopefully, I aim to have it done before I release episode 2. So I will definitely inform you guys what the channel will be called and where you can find all that stuff. I am just starting out here, so I'm still kind of pulling everything together. However, I do want to kind of inform you guys the best I can. So I will be releasing some more specific types of content, especially for these topics that can be a little bit more confusing. And I would want to dedicate that 5-10 minutes just to specifically talk about one topic. You know, I wouldn't even mind dedicating 5 minutes to talk about only realized and unrealized gains, for example. And moving into the next thing now is the different types of accounts and what kind of tax benefits they may have. So we'll start off with talking about what a TFSA is. So what a TFSA stands for is a tax-free savings account. And basically, it is what the name says. It's a tax-free savings account. So if you do put your money in there and your investments grow, all of the money you make on there is completely tax-free, which is amazing. I love this account. This is personally probably my favorite account, if I'd have to say so, but the one issue with it, the one catch you could say, is that there is a yearly contribution limit. Now, for the year of 2024, that contribution limit is $7,000. This account started back in 2009, where the contribution limit for that year was $5,000. Now, the TFSA is indexed to grow with inflation rate, or for the contribution limit to grow with inflation, so that you basically can contribute the same amount each year, which is definitely a really cool thing to see. Now, I don't want to confuse you guys by telling you what each contribution limit was year after year, but I did want to talk a little bit about how this account actually works. So you can only open a TFSA once you are 18 years of age, and your contribution limit only starts from that year that you turned 18. So, as an example, let's say you are a young investor who was born in the year 2000. We're going to use these numbers because they're a little bit easier to work with. So you turned 18 in the year 2018. So your first contribution would have been $5,500 that you could have done in the year of 2018. Up to that point, the contribution limits grew. So your total contribution limit is $43,000. Now, the cool thing is let's say that you're listening to this as a 24-year-old now, and you never utilize that contribution limit. You still have that $43,000 that you can contribute to. However, you just can't contribute to anything that was prior to that year. So if you were 18 on or before the year 2009, your total contribution limit is $95,000 in the year of 2024. So that's the cool thing about how the TFSA actually works and what you can do with it. Now, the one downside to this account, I guess, is that you're restricted to how much you can contribute. So there is kind of a finite way that you can only contribute so much. But if you think about it, for this year, $7,000 is quite a lot to contribute into an account. And even if this is your first year that you turned 18, $7,000 will compound amazingly for your next 45 years until you get into retirement. And I really wanted to empower you guys to really tell you how powerful compound interest is. So I'm going to use this as an example. If you put $7,000 into your account this year as an 18-year-old, you have 47 years until you turn 65. If you invested that entire $7,000 in the S&P 500, which historically for the last 40 years has returned an average of 9.9%, after those 47 years, you would have $591,000, over $591,000 from this one-time $7,000 investment. So now imagine how much more that could compound if you're investing the max amount you can, right? So let's say next year you put another $7,000 in, and now you have $14,000 compounding for 46 years. That is honestly, and plus whatever compounded throughout that last year on that $7,000, it's going to exponentially increase how much money you can earn. And that almost $600,000 would be completely tax-free for you, which would just be crazy. And the one thing I wanted to mention, your TFSA contributions are not tax-deductible. So unlike your RRSP, where you put money into it and then you can say on your tax report that you put this much into your your RRSP, that does not count for the TFSA. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk a little bit about for today. I know I didn't get a chance to cover all the accounts, but you know, I got my timer going here and we are getting around that 30 minute mark. I want to keep these episodes between that 20 to 40 minute area. You know, I can definitely extend them depending on if we have a lot of questions. I can make dedicated episodes only to specific questions, or you know, just a Q&A episode. But, you know, if you're listening to this, I would love to hear if you learned anything, or if this is something that you already knew, or if you have any questions, or even if you have anything that you'd just like me to cover in future episodes. I'm always open to exploring new opportunities for everybody and for myself as well. So please feel free to comment anywhere that you can. And yeah, I really appreciate you guys taking the time to listen, and I will hopefully see you guys in my second episodes. And yeah, I hope you have an amazing rest of your day. Thanks, guys.